What's going on, people? Welcome to Paint Points. As usual, I'm your host, Jake Painting, and we are brought to you by the SB Nation Podcast Network and the Tanner Supers family. Today, very special episode of Paint Points. We are back with our first edition of a post-game Paint Points. It's coming straight after the game. Memphis defeating Minnesota 107-105, the first preseason game of the year. It was a sloppy game. It was a strange kind of game. Everyone looked like they hadn't played in 9 months, which makes sense. But we're finally back with some basketball, some actual real life basketball to analyze. We'll go through some quick hitters today and just kind of run through what we saw in the game, what we liked, what we didn't like, all that good stuff. Joining me today is a man who doesn't sleep. It's late for him over there. It's Kane Super's contributor, Jack Borman. What's going on, Jack?
I'm great, man. It was fun to see everybody back out playing tonight. Obviously, you know, 277 days since the Timberwolves last took the floor is just kind of crazy to conceptualize and think about it. And like you said, it was certainly a game in which it looked like guys hadn't played in close to 9 months. It was sloppy, but it was a ton of fun to be able to watch them play and just see different guys kind of in different roles and just a bunch of experimenting on the floor.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun watching that tonight. Obviously, the result didn't go Minnesota's way, but I think in general we're not going to focus too much on the result. It's obviously the first game of preseason. I don't think it matters too much, and I think that, as you said, with all the experimenting that went on, it's kind of hard to put a lot of stock into a lot of things. So we're just going to give a quick overview. I want to start off with the lineups. If you weren't following Jack along on Twitter, he had a lineup tracker in a spreadsheet that he was doing throughout the game. We're going to kind of go over a few things with that to start off with. I think that lineups in general have been the flavor of the month to do with the Timberwolves. It's what everyone's been interested to see how it would work out with the additions of Ricky Rubio, with Anthony Edwards coming in as the first overall pick, and guys like Ed Davis and Jake Lehman and Juancho Hernan Gomez all kind of seeing where they're going to slot in. So what interested you the most, Jack, and what did you kind of take away with lineups more than anything tonight?
So the first thing that I took away was that we only got 3 minutes of Ricky Rubio and D'Angelo Russell playing together. So those two shared the floor for 3 minutes and 9 seconds, the final 3 minutes and 9 seconds of the first quarter, and that lineup was a -4. And something that I noticed right away with that lineup was exactly how they used D'Angelo Russell. So the first play, they had D'Lo on a drag flare screen, and he looked to attack the rim and was kind of wild and out of control a little bit, and almost turned the ball over twice trying to get downhill to the rim. And again, just looked like a guy who hadn't played in 9 months. And then the other two times, or the second and third of the first three possessions that they had in the half court were both handoff actions. That you know, Russell either looked to shoot right off the handoff and he made one of those threes. And then the other one, he kind of turned the corner and tried to get downhill going to the rim. So that was the first thing that I noticed, that those two only played for 3 minutes together. And then the other one was that we didn't see Josh Okogie play the four at all. So we heard that Ryan Saunders last Saturday in a media availability said that Josh, his effective height is 6'8", and that would allow him to play some four. And in his post-game press conference tonight, Ryan Saunders said that the biggest thing they were looking for with all the lineups that they played tonight was spacing. How well spaced were all the lineups that were out there? And he mentioned, too, that there were a checklist kind of that he wanted to see out of every single lineup, and he said he checked most of those boxes tonight. So I think the thinking there was kind of interesting that, you know, he kind of mentioned Josh as a potential four guy, but that in my lineups, based on who else was on the floor, I didn't see him really playing much of the four at all.
No.
So those were kind of the two things that stuck out to me right away. What were some of your thoughts?
Yeah, the same kind of things. I think that in general, the non-D'Lo Rubio minutes where it was just Rubio on the floor, I think most of the time it was with Malik Beasley and Anthony Edwards or Josh Okogie at the three. They performed pretty well. I think by your measurements, the Rubio, Malik, Okogie, Layman, Towns lineup was a plus four in about three and a half minutes, just under 3.5 minutes. And then the Rubio, Beasley, Edwards, Hernan Gomez, Towns lineup was a plus three in just under 2 minutes, which obviously is a minuscule sample size, but I right. think that it stood out to me straight away that Rubio was able to get rebounds, push the pace. I think Malik Beasley is just as good a fit alongside Rubio as Russell is, if not better, just because Beasley loves to get out in transition, loves to space to the corners in those kind of semi-fast break opportunities. And then, you know, you've got Okogie Edwards there as well, who are similar, like to get out in transition. And I think in general, what's different to that one lineup you discussed with Rubio and Russell is that Carl Anthony Towns was on the floor. And even Towns at his rustiness that he was tonight, and he really couldn't buy a 3-point shot. But I think you can see just how much Towns changes the dynamic of the offense. Obviously, he is the best offensive player on the team. And I think when Rubio was with Towns, you could definitely say that offense was clicking really well. And I think that Towns also defended better in the pick and roll, just from being next to Rubio and having a guy who can really fight more at the point of attack.
Yeah. And then the one other thing I just wanted to mention jumping in was that when Russell and Rubio played together, Towns was not on the floor. They were joined by Anthony Edwards, Juancho, Hernan Gomez, and Ed Davis, which I thought was a little surprising that we didn't get to see the three of those guys all playing together. But then when you said about Rubio and Towns, all of the lineups that Rubio and Towns played together in tonight were either a neutral, so a net gain of zero, or they were positive. So the three lineups respectively were plus zero, plus four, and plus three. Which I think is huge that all those lineups are positive.
Yeah, and I don't think that, I think sometimes single game plus minus, especially in a sample size that's, you know, lineup by lineup, can be a bit tricky at times. It can be a bit misleading, but I think that matches the eye test just because Rubio seemed to play well with Towns, and not even the fact that they were necessarily synergistic together and kind of, you know, running pick and roll and getting buckets for each other, more that just the whole offense seemed to run better with them two on the floor. And then the defense, Towns' defense is slightly enhanced. And I thought Towns was respectable tonight defensively. I don't think he was amazing, and I don't think we can expect him to be amazing, but I thought that he definitely grew into the game, especially as a rim protector. But we'll get into that a bit in a minute. The other thing that I thought stood out in the lineups, in both the plus minus and just watching the game, was that the quote unquote starting lineup, which we know isn't set in stone, but the Russell, Beasley, Okogie, Layman, Towns lineup was a plus one in the first stint they had, which was just 4.5 minutes, and then they were a plus four in the second stint that they had, which was just coming out of the halftime break, and that was another 4.5 minutes, actually the exact same time, 4:32. So I think that that seemed to work really well, and that's obviously one of the biggest keys is you want the starting lineup to get you off to a good start, both at the start of the game and coming out of the halftime break. And I think that lineup really complemented each other pretty well, and the addition of Okogie at the three to give you some defensive presence. He guarded the point of attack a lot of the times. He took Morant, who obviously Jar was on fire tonight and was really good. But I think that Okogie didn't really do a whole lot wrong defensively, and I think that helps Towns and it helps, you know, hiding Russell off the ball. And then Layman, who will dive into a little bit more, but he was excellent tonight, Layman. And I think any minutes that he had next to Towns and next to Russell were plus. So yeah, that's the other thing that I kind of gleaned from just the lineup perspective is the starting lineup really performed fairly admirably tonight.
Yeah, I was impressed with what I saw. I think Josh Okogie played out of control a little bit at times and kind of was kind of driving to pass too much.
When you've got as much energy as J.O., I think that 9 months off kind of all came out in the wrong way at times. It's just like he exploded onto the court, and I think that can be a problem for him when he, you know, is on a back-to-back, let alone a 9 month stint. So I think he'll get that a little bit more under control. But yeah, Josh was definitely a burst of energy tonight, and sometimes not in a good way.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And then the other thing I wanted to point out just about the starters overall is that Jake Layman was fantastic. Jake Layman was phenomenal rotating on the backside when Towns was faced with, you know, a big guy like Valanciunas in the mid post, or got switched out onto a guard or a wing on kind of the wing where the corner turns into the wing, and it was very evident to me that they had Kat shading everything to the baseline, and then had Layman helping on the baseline, which I think is a really good pivot from David Vanterpool, considering how much the Wolves let ball handlers get into the middle of the lane, especially from the sides and the corners of the floor on offense. So I think by doing that, you open yourself up a little bit more to kind of the open corner threes in the backside if you don't rotate over correctly. And I think, you know, some of those rotations were a little bit late tonight. And obviously, you know, that comes with only having a few days to practice, and some guys not really being able to practice much at all because of the COVID protocols and getting back into town and whatnot. So that's kind of my initial takeaway from the starting five. But I mean, there was a lot of good, you know, good offense from the starting five in terms of, you know, really being spaced out well and opening up driving lanes. I think we saw that in the first couple of possessions where Kat had his two and ones. You know, he kind of caught the ball and drove to the rim right away and was able to get two and ones just because the offense was so well spaced. And I think that Kat's going to be able to do that, you know, almost as much as he wants to, if the offense is going to be able to be spaced out that nicely. Yeah, and the one thing he's got to be a little careful of is that he doesn't get called for charges, because I think that tendency could be there, and he just can't really afford to pick up offensive fouls, considering how aggressive he's going to be on defense and how foul prone he is on defense. So I think this year is going to be a really unique opportunity for Kat to create plays for himself and others off the dribble in a more spaced out offense.
Yeah, and just on that offensive scheme, I think that tonight we saw a little bit of a pivot away from the mantra that they ingrained last season, which was obviously shooting a lot of threes and trying to get to the rim as much as possible and pretty much eliminating the mid-range. I think they shot 15 mid-range shots tonight. I believe they hit four of them. So it wasn't really good for mid-range, but that's definitely not what we've seen in the past. I think they only shot over 10 mid-range shots, maybe I think it was 16 times last season in 64 games. Don't quote me on that, but I think that's the stat that I just saw before. I think that's maybe a little bit of an aberration. I think that in general, they don't want to shoot that many mid-range shots, but it is good to get D'Angelo Russell shooting mid-range shots. I think it's very important for him, his game, to let him work in the mid-range at least for a couple of possessions a game. We saw tonight he hit two or three pull-up mid-range jumpers coming off a town screen, and that really makes the defense have another thing to think about. They can't really just zone off on the Towns in that pick and pop. They can't direct all the attention to the shooters. They have to suck in a little bit and try and stop Russell, and that opens up everything else. It opens up shots for Towns. It opens up rolling lanes for Towns. It opens up space for the shooters like Beasley and Layman or Hernan Gomez or whoever's out on the floor with them. So I think shooting mid-range shots shouldn't be treated as a sin, but it also probably needs to be cleaned up a little bit tonight and maybe just a few better-looking shots. I think there was one with Towns where he rolled and then pulled up for a mid-range shot, and I know, you know, we both know that Karl Anthony Towns can hit any shot really when he's playing well, but I think that was kind of another example of a bit of sloppiness and a bit of not knowing each other's games too well between him and Russell, where in reality, you probably want Towns to be spotting up outside the 3-point line for that, or to be taking two dribbles after he gets that pocket pass and go into the rim. But I think in general, the overwhelming note for this game is that it looked disjointed. It did look disjointed. It looked sloppy. It looked like guys who hadn't played for 9 months, and then on top of that, guys who haven't played together even before that 9 months. So, was there anything you saw with the offense that kind of piqued your interest?
Yeah, kind of going off that. So I sat in on the media availability with Ryan Saunders, D'Angelo Russell, Jalen Noel, and Ricky Rubio tonight. And Marnie Gilner had the first question, and she asked, about the mid-range shots. And Saunders kind of chuckled and said, he said that a good number of them were, quote, settles, is what he said. And then he said, quote, it's something we'll clean up. And that was the same phrase that you used, I think. I think it's interesting because in the first quarter, I saw that, Dane had tweeting something saying about, how the Wolves were shooting more mid-range shots. And in the first quarter, I thought that with the exception of two fadeaways that Ricky Rubio and D'Lo had, I thought that the mid-range shots that they were taking were good shots. D'Lo... Yeah. D'Lo hit a couple good in rhythm mid-range shots that I have no issue with. And then Anthony Edwards, the mid-range shot that he hit in the second quarter coming around his screen, into a two-dribble pull-up that was wide open. You can say, too, that you'd rather see him attack the rim, and that's fine. But, he's a rookie, and if he feels comfortable shooting that shot and that's what he needs to do to kind of get in a rhythm, then I'm all for those guys taking those shots. And Jalen Noel had a couple good pull-ups in the mid-range late in the game as well. For me, I think that the Timberwolves need to just take good open shots if they're there. I understand that they have a philosophy. They want to play inside out, and they want to, shoot a lot of threes and get to the rim and get to the free throw line. And they did those things well tonight. They shot 37% from three on 35 attempts, and I think they went to the rim 32 times and made 24 free throws. So they were good in that department. I just think that, at the end of the day, they didn't score quite as much just because, their main guys didn't play as much.
And the turnovers killed them. The turnovers were really the one thing.
Then they're lucky they didn't lose by more, to be honest with you, because Minnesota had 22 turnovers, but Memphis only had 8 points off of those 22 turnovers. And then conversely, Memphis only had 15 turnovers, but Minnesota had 24 points off of those turnovers. So, Minnesota's lucky that they shot as well as they did from deep and got to the free throw line. Otherwise, this would have been ugly. Just because Memphis had 30 assists on 40 field goals and Minnesota only had 17 on 34 made field goals. I think a lot of it, too, just has to do with the fact that these guys haven't played much together at all.
And the Memphis team has played together. Desmond Bane, and then obviously the guys that come in at the end, which are kind of throwaway minutes anyway. But that's pretty much the same team as last year, who obviously were really good and exceeded expectations last season. So I think it's pretty much what I expected tonight. I expected Memphis to win. I expected Minnesota to have serious growing pains, and then also times where you could glimpse what this offense is going to be, and if the defense is going to be horrible or just bad or mediocre. What did you think about the defense? I actually didn't think the defense was horrible in this game. Obviously, they still ran the drop coverage. I know there was some questions whether they would try and change things up a little bit there, but they maintained with the same drop coverage in pick and roll as they ran last season. I think, as you noted a little bit earlier, they really tried to help give Towns more help with the guys coming in from the corners. You noted Lehman. I think Vanderbilt did it as well at one stage. I think that Hernan Gomez was trying as well, and I think that did give up some open corner threes, which are not shots that you want to give up. But in general, I think that the defense held up fairly well, considering that it's a defense that we don't expect to be good at all. So
Too is that Cat looked like a much better rim protector because of the way that they were playing defense. I think he got a little aggressive, and Ja Morant was just destroying the Wolves defense getting into the paint. specifically in the second quarter. But outside of that, Cat did a really, really good job of defending on the interior and altering shots without fouling and forcing guys to the opposite side of the rim, where he had help with Jake Layman. And I think if the Wolves are going to be able to do that and Cat's going to be able to be more of a force on the interior, that bodes really, really well for the long-term development of this defense. And I think that obviously, again, it's going to take time and they're going to need to gel. But being able to get thrown into the fire and play, Memphis team that's bringing back almost exactly the same team plus Desmond Bain and minus Brandon Clark in the preseason and then Jaren Jackson for the first, few weeks of the season. It'll be interesting to watch and it's going to be trial by fire for them. So, but overall, I really liked the adjustments that they made on defense in that, right away, they didn't have a drop coverage that I saw until about midway through the first quarter.
They ran a lot of 2-3 zone as well. Like they mixed in a bit of 2-3 zone throughout the game as well.
Which I thought was great.
Yeah, and we've discussed this throughout the whole offseason that we think showing zone for times during the game is a great idea, and then it junks up the game, and then it kind of throws a different look at the offense. And I think when you're a team who can't defend very well in general, throwing different looks at a team and not letting them settle into the one scheme that you're running and being really dogmatic with it is good process.
Yeah, 100%. And I think too, with D'Lo specifically, Cat also called out an ice a couple times. Shout out Tibbs. but I think that's important. That it's very clear to me that so in Portland, what Vanderpool did was he funneled everything into the middle of the paint, into Yusuf Nurkic. And
that's when Towns can be good. When players are funneled into him, that's when he doesn't have to think too much. He doesn't have to make these really complex split second decisions, and he can just focus on getting a hand up, trying to block a shot, or just staying solid rather than trying to like play between two guys in pick and roll. Like if you can get guys who can funnel their opposition into Towns, that makes his life so much simpler, and therefore enhances the Wolves' defense in general.
Yeah, and I think there's a difference between funneling guys into the middle and Ja Morant just coming around the screen, getting downhill and forcing Cat to kind of do that in between, kind of being that in between position where he's got to choose between Ja or the big.
And that's a tough position to be in.
And that was where the Wolves kind of got killed defensively tonight. But I think the point that I was going to make is that I wonder if Vanderpool is kind of thinking of doing the exact opposite of trying to get everything away from the middle of the floor, enforce everything baseline, and utilize the Wolves' extreme length that they have in their starting five. I mean, their starting five, everybody's wingspan is at least 6'8" or 6'9". And the only person who I think has a wingspan, shorter than 6'10" is Malik Beasley. But with his activity and his lateral quickness, I think that the Wolves are going to make life really tough for teams if they want to try and go baseline. And I think that's what the Wolves tried to make Memphis do tonight. And it worked really, really well with the exception of Ja getting into the paint. So,
And Ja was just on one tonight as well.
He was phenomenal.
At times you've just got to tip your hat to great offensive players and you obviously want to do a better job on Morant. But I think there was times tonight where I thought the defense was fairly good and the offense was just much better. I mean, they finished with a 100 defensive rating, so it definitely wasn't like that's good by all standards, but hard to decipher in a preseason game where 15 players play on each team. But in general, I think they'd be pretty happy with 100 defensive rating. I mean, Jake Layman had a 26.3 net rating. I think he was by far the best defender. We've already discussed the help defense. I think he was quite good when he was in the few occasions that he was put on the ball. And then I think he was really good in transition. I think he had one or two steals in transition where pretty much the bucket looked like a surefire thing for Memphis. So in general, I think Layman was probably the best player on the court tonight, maybe apart from Jalen Noel. But in general, I was pretty happy with the defense.
Yeah, for sure. Do you want to get into a little bit of the individual players and how they performed?
Yeah, yeah. So the first one I wanted to talk about is kind of as a duo is Karl Anthony Towns and D'Angelo Russell. Obviously, they're the franchise centerpieces, and we haven't seen them. We've only seen the one game. It's been discussed to death during this offseason, but this was our first chance to see a little bit of them two together. How do you think they fared together? Obviously, we didn't get a huge sample size, but what were your initial thoughts?
I wasn't that impressed, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
I think that I expected those two to really kind of know where each other would be on the floor a little bit better than they did tonight. You could count on your hand how many pick and rolls those two went, how many pick and rolls those two ran tonight. And because of that, I just don't think that the offense did as much as they could. And Ryan Saunders seemed a little bit frustrated with the way the offense played tonight, kind of about the starters. He said that he thought they ran some good action and they had good activity and good spacing. But I think that ultimately those two players need to be more involved with one another if they're going to be successful. I thought that D'Angelo Russell and Malik Beasley played very, very well together and showed a lot of chemistry and synergy on that end. And that Josh Okogie, you know, made some good decisions when he drove and was looking to pass. But I really need to see more from Kat and D'Lo, just from a volume perspective, because the output isn't going to be there if you're not putting enough into it. And so whether that be, you know, more pick and roll action, or more kind of, you know, getting the ball to Kat in the corner getting the ball to Kat in the post and then, you know, setting a screen for D'Lo to get open on the perimeter. There just needs to be more interaction between those two on offense if the Timberwolves are going to want to play better and out, you know, like you were talking about on our last podcast, just really come out and hit teams in the mouth and get out to an early lead as opposed to being forced to play from behind.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think that it's early and we expect better, but I don't think they were really on the same page as much as we expected them to be. And obviously they haven't played together, but they are, you know, really good friends and they speak a lot. And D'Angelo Russell's talked about how much he watched film on Towns this year to see where he wanted the ball and kind of pick apart the film and try and really get to know Towns without being on the court with him. But I think the one thing that stood out to me is, like you said, not a lot of pick and rolls. And then in the pick and pop, I think that there was at least two or three where Russell was just that second or two slow to get the ball to Towns in the pick and pop. And Towns, as we know, only needs a sliver of space to get up a three. And I think that there was, maybe two or three times where Russell came around the pick and got trapped, and by the time he got trapped, you know, the defense had rotated, the defensive shell had kind of got itself back in shape, and Towns wasn't open anymore. He still got the ball, but it wasn't a pass to a shot. It was more just a pass to get the ball kicking around the perimeter, and that's something that any player, I think, any point guard that plays with Towns needs to realize, that if you come off that screen and two guys come with you, You need to be able to hit Karl Anthony Towns immediately, because that's open shots. That's your best 3-point shooter. That's, you know, one of the best 3-point shooters in the league, and you need to get him as many shots as possible. And then I think that in general they didn't run a lot of just action at all. I don't think they ran one Towns post up for the entire game, which I found surprising. I would have liked to see them run that, and like you said, maybe run D'Lo off some screens off ball and draw the defense in with the threat of Towns scoring in a one-on-one post opportunity. Maybe that was just easing things back into it. Maybe it was because of Valanciunas, who's, you know, a very strong dude, maybe not an elite defender, but a hard guy to move, especially with Towns coming back and not having played for so long. But yeah, in general, I think that it wasn't the most encouraging performance from those two, but I think there were still some times where you could see that, obviously, just with the firepower both of those guys have, they're still able to make an impact. I think when they were both in the court, Minnesota played fairly well. But together, as a duo, it wasn't their best showing, I don't think.
Yeah, no, I think too that you know, those two just really need to focus on knowing where each other are at all times. And if they can do that,
and that should come, and that should come.
Oh, I'm not worried that it's not going to come. I just think that if it's not there right now, then there needs to be more offense centered around getting those two involved. Do you know what I mean? Like more set pieces or call outs for
even just simple things like handoff action. I don't think we saw enough handoff action with Towns and Russell. Just any action that allows both of those players to touch the ball in the space of 10 seconds. Like, they're both dynamic enough where they can get things going even in a broken play sort of opportunity, but those broken plays need to involve both of those guys touching the ball, or both of those guys, you know, moving off the ball and looking for each other, and like you said, knowing where each other want the ball. So I agree, I think it'll come, but in this season, in the weird world that we live in, it's they don't have much time for it to come together. So if they want to come out and win games, they probably need to get this sorted within the next week or two, because they can't afford to have Towns and Russell out of sync to start the season, because that's the great white hope right there is those two.
Yeah, absolutely. Go ahead.
I was going to say, if you want to move on, if you want to say, if you have anything else to say on Cat and D'Lo, I know we're kind of just going to power through a few of these, and it is the quick hitters, so we don't want to spend too much time on it.
Yeah, no, I'm pretty much good on Cat and D'Lo. The one thing I wanted to touch on is I know it can kind of be ridiculous at times to look at single game net rating averages, but I thought it was really interesting that Cat had a defensive rating of 96 tonight, which is really good. Anything below 100 is excellent. Most Timberwolves for the season last year were in the 110 to 120 range, if that gives you any indication. And that's pretty bad. But Josh Okogie, 79.5. Jake Lehman, 85, essentially. Cat, 96. And then D'Lo was by far the worst of any of the five starters, clocking in at 126. So I think that obviously part of it is playing Ja Morant, but two, I think the Timberwolves need to do more to try and help D'Angelo Russell. And I don't know if that means potentially moving Josh Okogie down to guard ones, if we're confident that Jake Lehman is going to be able to be a really good backside rotational defender, or maybe not a really good one, but just like a solid one. So those are kind of the last remaining thoughts that I have about those two, but.
Hi, this is Scott Galloway, professor of marketing at NYU Stern School of Business and host of the Prop G Pod. If you don't know me, the New York Times calls me the Howard Stern of business. Kara Swisher, super friggin' insightful, and Elon Musk, an insufferable numbskull. I think we're going to make up. I think we're going to go somewhere and do ketamine together. Each week on my show, the Prop G Pod, we bring you insights from Blue Flame thinkers, including my nemesis, Adam Grant. Super smart guy. My nemesis because he's really good. Or one of our favorite journalists, Fareed Zakaria. Fareed's a total gangster. Not only that, we provide listeners with a markets-driven episode every Monday. We answer our listeners' questions about business, big tech, and career pivots every Wednesday, and get to listen to the sweet sound of George Hahn reading our newsletter every Saturday. That's right. The Prop G Pod is in your feeds four times a week. I'm like AOL in the 90s. To resist is futile. Put your hand into a box of cereal. Is it a tasty, sugary snack? Nope. It's the dog.
Yeah, and just on that note, I think that Russell was really bad off the ball tonight, which we've kind of come to expect, but he does definitely zone off when he's not on the ball. I actually think that he's not a terrible, terrible on-ball defender when he's locked in, and he can fight. Like, he's quite not weak, but you know, not a strong and burly small guard. But when he doesn't have to fight through screens all game, he can stay with his man. But it's off the ball that worries me. I think there was a few back cuts or just, you know, dives to the rim tonight where he was directly responsible and kind of just in his own world, and that's something that it's hard to cover that. Like, if one guy falls asleep off the ball, it's kind of hard to predict that. If everyone's doing their job, you can predict where the rotations need to be and where the holes are going to be in the defense, and you can get guys to move into those holes. But when one guy kind of just completely collapses your whole defense, it's tough to stop. And I think that would have been one of the reasons why his defensive rating was so much lower than pretty much everyone in the starting five and most guys on the team. And it's something that I think we'll probably have to come to expect, because it's been something that Russell's been doing for his entire career.
Yeah, And it just, I think it all just comes down to how hard he's going to compete. And if Vanderpool can get him to compete, I think the Wolves are going to be pretty good. And if he plays like he did tonight on defense, it's going to be tough for the Wolves to win games.
Yeah. So moving on, obviously there's a few guys debuting tonight or returning that were the talk of the town. We'll start with the number one pick, Anthony Edwards. I think obviously a tough shooting night for him. I think at times he looked a little bit overawed by the situation. He flashed some nice things. I think he probably should have had two or three more assists. I think he made some really nice reads actually. And then obviously the pull up three for his first bucket, and then the pull up mid range that you spoke about before for his second bucket. He was 2 of 9 from the field after that, 1 of 5 from three, 4 rebounds, 1 assist, 5 fouls, which I kind of didn't even notice till I looked at the box score that he picked up 5 fouls. But what do you think of Edwards, and do you think he can even read too much into it, you know, being that it's 25 minutes of his first preseason game ever?
You know, I'm not going to read into it too much. In the article that I wrote today before the game about what I was watching for, one of the things that I noted that I was going to be looking for was how is he going to be used on offense? And I think that there was a lot of Anthony Edwards standing around and being delegated to the corner rather than him being on the ball. And I think that we saw tonight what can happen when you put Anthony Edwards on the ball. It's clearly where he's most comfortable offensively. I think he had a much more aggressive mindset and wanted to score when he had the ball in his hands for that period of time in the second quarter where they made an effort to kind of have him initiate some pick and roll, and that's where he had all 5 of his points. Like you said, he had the pull-up three, and then he had the really nice kind of pump fake into a 2 or 3 dribble pull-up from about the free throw line. Which was cash. So I think if you're able to get something like that going where you can get the ball to him and have him play in his spots, I think that's going to be really important. But I also thought it was interesting that I don't think Edwards play tonight with Kat in D'Lo much?
I think he did for like two minutes.
Yeah,
so I think he played with Towns for a little bit, but not with both. He mainly played with like Beasley and Rubio.
So he played with Kat and D'Lo for roughly 5 minutes. For roughly 5 minutes, and they were -10. And so I think Edwards is just gonna. I think Edwards was a little timid and didn't really know kind of where to pick his spots on offense until they kind of gave him the ball in the second quarter and asked him to initiate pick PNR.
And when he was doing that, it was with a lineup that didn't have as many scorers on it. You know what I mean? Where he was kind of thrown in. Like I think it might have been with D'Angelo Russell on the floor as well, but then Culver, Lehman, and Ed Davis. I think it was that lineup in the second where he started to get it going a little bit. And maybe that's what he needs sometimes is to not have too many cooks in the kitchen with Edwards, because it seems like he didn't really know when to pick his spots, which I think it is a good thing. He obviously didn't want to come in and shoot 20 shots and take the ball out of Russell and Towns' hands. But at times, he needed to be a little bit more aggressive. I think you saw him miss a few shots, or I think he might have got blocked at the rim once. And then after that, he turned down probably a few driving lanes and tried to make the extra pass. And I like that mentality, but it didn't work out for him. And in general, he's a scorer. And I think the one thing that I don't like about his game at the moment and isn't really suited to this team is he clearly hasn't been a guy who's played off the ball very much in his career. And like you said, a lot of standing around, but sometimes, you know, if you don't have the ball, you don't have to stand around. Like just moving into open spots around the 3-point line, like getting into the passes line of sight, that's something that I don't think he did very well tonight. And just making himself available for catch and shoot opportunities or diving to the rim on cuts. He was a very good back cutter at Georgia, and we didn't see any of that tonight. So, yeah, I think there was a lot to work on for Edwards, but I also think there was encouraging signs and very understandable, you know, nerves and a bit cautiousness.
Yeah, and I think with Edwards, the whole thing is just going to take time, especially with him playing off the ball. You know, like we've talked about in the past, he spent far more time playing on the ball at Georgia than off. And I think his coach at Georgia, Tom Crean, said it best. You know, he's got to be in a situation that supports the hell out of him and does a really good job of teaching him how to play. Because all the tools for him to be great are there, and it's just about molding them to kind of help
the right
create,
way.
Yeah, to kind of help create the best possible player. And I think the Timberwolves have something to work with in terms of what we saw tonight. I think far too often he was just standing around in the corner, and I was expecting him to cut more. You know, I wrote this afternoon that I think how much he ran and moved without the ball in his hands is going to be proportional to how much he scored. And he didn't score at all when he didn't have the ball in his hands. And that sounds stupid, Jack. You need the ball in your hands to put it in the basket. Yeah, I know. But I'm more referring to his positioning on the floor. And there weren't sets that were being run for him where he was initiating them.
He looked a lot better.
Yep. It's as simple as that, really. And so I'm interested to see if they show more of him on the ball on Monday, if they don't play him as much with Cat and Beasley and Rubio, which I think is the right decision. I think playing him with Ricky Rubio and Jarrett Culver is the kind of the way to go to at least to start out and allow him to get more practice time to work with Cat and D'Lo.
So moving on to one more thing on Edwards that I wanted to point out was I think that he looked pretty lost on defense as well at times, which we expected. I think he, in general, is quite good on the ball. Kind of like the same thing I said with Russell. I think when he's locked in, he's quite good on the ball. He's obviously really strong, really fast laterally. Got all the tools to be a great defender on the ball. But same thing as Russell, lost his man off the ball a few times. That's to be expected, I think. It's to be expected from any rookie, but especially one that comes in with a stereotype around him that he's not a good defender, and that is true. He wasn't a good defender at Georgia. So, I just wanted to make that note, but that was just another thing I had there for Edwards.
Yeah, I was just going to just add on to that quick. I think it's just a speed of the game thing. You know, I tweeted that we could see him kind of processing it in real time because of how much slower he was moving. And that's not because he's not an insane athlete, because he is. It's just that you can't move if you don't know where you're going or where you're supposed to be. And I think you could see the wheels turning in real time. And I think that as we see more games of him playing, I think that's going to hopefully become quicker and quicker and quicker.
Yeah. And I think if you look at quotes from any rookie, that's the first thing they always point to with respect to the change between college basketball and NBA basketball, is that the speed of the game and the physicality are the two things that are huge jumps and huge transitions to make. And it doesn't surprise me that the game looked like it was going a little bit too fast for his mind tonight. And I think that there will be many times during this season where that happens. And like you noted at the start of this conversation, it's going to be a process with him. And I think he's in the right place where he doesn't need to score 20 points a night. He can have a game like tonight. And I don't think that's going to lose Minnesota basketball games. I think if he shoots 2 of 9 from the field, you can still have an off offense to win you a game just through 3 or 4 other players. And one of those players is obviously Ricky Rubio, the other returning player, the debut, I guess, if you wanted to say that, newfound debut. He was very brief appearance. He only played 12 minutes, which I think was to be expected. He's obviously 30 years old and coming off a pretty short preseason, but I think Rubio was Rubio. He was quite good. He pushed the pace and created easy transition opportunities, especially after himself grabbing the rebound. And that's Ricky Rubio. He's pretty easy to analyze, I think, tonight, because he just did what Ricky does. He was a little bit sloppy with some of his passes and a little bit more turnover prone than we're used to. I think he had 3 turnovers and 2 assists. So that's not really the Ricky we know. But again, it's understandable at this point of the season. And he scored 9 points in 12 minutes. He hit a 3 coming off movement, off a dead sprint to the corner. And then I just think Rubio, you saw immediately in those 12 minutes what he brings to this team and how much he really raise the ceiling of this team.
Yeah, and the other thing too is that You know, Ricky kind of consistently stressed in his post-game media availability that you know, it is going to take time, and that there is a lot of guys who are on different timetables in terms of when they've last played, you know, how good of shape they're in, how much they've been with one another and practice with one another, and that, you know, these types of things aren't going to all come together all at once. And I think that in order to see this Wolves team fully maximized, like, that's not going to happen in December or January. It's going to happen in March or April or May. And so for Ricky, I think it's just about him kind of learning the tendencies of the guys that he's playing with. And that once he's able to do that, I think that you're going to see less of those sloppier passes, and he's going to understand kind of the spots that guys like to be in and get the ball to those guys in their spots. And he mentioned that tonight, and he specifically mentioned Jake Lehman as a guy he needs to spend time with and learn his tendencies, which is great. And Ricky made a great pass to Jake for an awesome dump off pass for a layup. I think it was either in the first or second quarter, but yeah, you know, I think with Ricky, he's a guy I'm not worried about whatsoever.
Yeah, right.
Just because he's a veteran, he's been on the block and knows kind of when to put his foot down and when to kind of ease off.
Yeah, I think in general that point you just made about everyone just not kind of knowing where their teammate wants the ball or where guys going to cut to the rim or space out to the corner, that was a problem all night. I think Russell might have had two or three turnovers where he just passed the ball to the wrong spot. I think one was Culver, where Culver spaced to the corner instead of cutting. I think Anthony Edwards did the same thing maybe with Culver again, where it's kind of they're just not on the same wavelength. And that is so obviously a time spent kind of issue. Like, they just haven't spent enough time with each other. They haven't talk to each other enough about how they want the ball and where they want the ball, and that's one thing that just doesn't really bother me, especially with Ricky, because, you know, we know Ricky is a savant with the ball in his hands, and once he learns where those guys want it, he really adapts to it very quickly. And I think with that Lehman bucket that you just spoke of, that was one where maybe earlier in the game they're a little bit disjointed, and then Ricky learns so fast and he processes the game at a different speed to many other players in the league. And once he kind of caught up to date with that, then the next play, he fed Lehman perfectly in stride on that little bounce pass drop off. And that was, to me, probably one of the plays of the night. That was kind of the only one where a huge smile came to my face, I think, after it, just because it was really nice to have Ricky back and those little reverse layups that he hit. And he didn't hit any of those little mid-range jumpers, but the work around the rim with those reverse layups and then the three from the corner, I think that really solid outing from Ricky.
Yeah. Yeah. So kind of moving on now to Jake Lehman. I thought that Lehman was probably the best player for the Timberwolves tonight.
Yeah, agreed.
On both ends of the floor. Just overall best two-way player the Wolves had. He worked his ass off on defense. You know, he was in all the right places at all the right times. He did a great job contesting shots if he didn't block them. He competed on the glass, I thought. You know, I think he did his part in trying to cut guys out and put a body on guys. He only had two rebounds, but I feel like he had a much bigger impact on the Timberwolves rebounding than that, if that makes sense.
Yeah, he moved a lot of guys out the way, or at least got in the way so Towns could come in and grab a rebound. Because I think, right, Towns rebounded really, really well tonight as well. And part of that was because Lehman was there giving him some help.
Yeah, Cat had eight rebounds in just 22 minutes. So, I think that probably could have turned into a 14-15 game rebound for him, rebound game for him. But what I was most impressed with Jake Lehman was how confident he looked on offense. You know, he was in the right spots on offense. He made two really nice step in threes. Didn't even hesitate thinking about it. And if he can do that, just confidently shoot open shots that he should take when he's spacing the floor the right way, that's going to be a huge plus for them. You know, if they can kind of seamlessly put him and Wancho in and not miss anything offensively from behind the line, I think that's going to go a long way in just helping make sure the floor is constantly spaced and just give enough of the kind of wing initiators and and ball handlers enough space to get to the rim and attack, which is going to be big.
Yeah, and I think we speak about his cutting all the time. I think he cut really well tonight. He had obviously the one off Rubio. He had a few other opportunities or just nice cuts that he didn't get the ball that really kept the offense ticking along. I think he made a few good passes. And I think what's different to Juancho with him is that he can attack the rim in transition with the ball in his hands, and he's quite fast. He's not a great finisher around the rim, but he can put pressure on the rim, and that opens up the floor for other guys. And I think there was one where he drove in the semi-fast break and just got the ball up on the rim, and Towns got the offensive rebound and put it back in. So I was super impressed with Lehman tonight, and I think in general it probably made Juancho Hernan Gomez's game look even worse than it was. And Hernan Gomez was, you know, to put it bluntly, pretty awful tonight. And obviously he's come off a very shortened preseason. He's only been back with the team for a few days. And he did have 8 points and 6 rebounds, but it wasn't a good 8 points and 6 rebounds. And I think that the problems that I see with Juancho, obviously there's the defensive issues, but then on offense, I think he gets a lot of tunnel vision. I don't think he's a good enough playmaker at all, or just a willing enough passer. And then if he's not hitting threes, I kind of just don't know what he does out there.
Right.
And I think that tonight was kind of a pretty big reality check for him, where if he doesn't play well in these next 2-3 games, then his starting position might be supplanted for the indefinable future. So, it was a rough one for Juancho.
Yeah, and Ryan Saunders said before the game that he doesn't – he kind of alluded to the fact that he didn't think that the starters tonight were going to be the starters on opening night.
Right.
And he said because some guys didn't get here at the same time and had visa problems. And that was obviously alluding to Juancho. And so if he had that thought of Juancho coming in and playing and starting, I'd think that he might start to reconsider that, just because Jake Lehman was Timberwolves' best plus 11 tonight, and Juancho was minus 16, which was
and it felt like it.
Yeah, and the reason why I keep referring to these plus minuses is because I really do feel like these plus minuses were indicative of kind of how the game went when these guys were on the floor. Like it feels right, and I know with some plus minuses it doesn't add up and doesn't feel right, but I do feel like tonight that showed. And Juancho, his net rating tonight was a minus 44, which was second worst behind Ed Davis, who was minus 47. And both of those guys were terrible. And they played together pretty much, for probably 90% of the minutes that they played together, or that they played out there, were probably with each other. And neither of them were good at all, which I think is going to be a huge problem if Minnesota, wants to have a functional front court. I think that means that Juancho almost might have to start, just so that, Lehman can play with Ed Davis. But, who knows, man?
Yeah. It's a hard one, I think. And it's, again, we just have to come back to the fact that it is one preseason game, and I've seen Twitter firing off takes about this game, and I think it's just way too early to make any sweeping declarations, but definitely a step in the right direction for Lehman tonight in terms of how many minutes he'll get and whether he'll be a starter or not. I think either way, he's going to play minutes alongside Kat. He's going to play minutes alongside Rubio and Russell. So
yeah,
I think he's entrenched in the rotation, I think, Lehman, which we kind of knew before tonight. But whether he's going to start eating up Juancho's minutes, that's kind of something to keep an eye on. I think one thing that maybe these three preseason games might actually determine.
Yeah, and I think what tonight did a good job of showing is kind of the ups and the downs, or like the best case and worst case, I guess, of what can happen, where like the best case is like Jake Lehman is awesome, and the worst case is that Juancho is really bad. Like I think it kind of shows the duality of how this team can play on any given night, and does a good job of kind of getting people to think about both sides of the equation, which I think is important. Like I think that's probably better than if the Timberwolves were just awful in every aspect tonight, or perfect in every aspect tonight. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah. But But my favorite part of the night, I think probably your favorite part of the night, the star of the game tonight was Jalen Noel. He had 22 points, a really efficient 22 points on 7 of 11 shooting and 4 of 7 from deep.
Outscored the Grizzlies in the fourth quarter by himself.
Yeah, 20 to 18.
Yeah, like I don't know if we before the game we expected to be sitting here talking about Jalen Noel as the star of the game and the guy who maybe you know made the biggest case for himself as a rotation player. All of a sudden, it was a surprise, but man, it was good to see him just stepping into those pick and roll 3-pointers and those. You know, little mid-range shots, and just him running pick and roll in general. I think he looked really comfortable in that point guard-ish role. I know he played alongside Culver and alongside Ashton Hagens as well at times, but he was definitively the point guard in those lineups. Like, he was handling the ball at the top of the key. He was running pick and roll. He was surveying the court really well. I know he wasn't out there just dropping dimes, but I don't think that he was... lacking anything in kind of in ball handling or court vision or just setting up the offense and man, what a game from Jalen.
Yeah, no, I think the biggest thing with Jalen, and I think Dane did a good job of asking about it in the post-game press conference, was Dane kind of said, you know, for whatever reason, you've had this label as a guy who's kind of a catch-and-shoot guy rather than a dynamic ball handler who can, you know, create for himself off the dribble and also run pick-and-roll and you know, get into the mid-range and kick it out to others or hit guys on cuts or rolls and stuff like that. And Jalen just laughed and smiled and just said, you know, I don't know where that came from. You know, I've been a guy who's been able to create off the dribble and you know, create my own shot and shoot in any type of way my whole life. and said, I showed it plenty at Washington and said, you know, if anybody watched the G League, that's kind of what I did last year. And I think Jalen really appreciated that question. And tonight, I mean, I don't think anybody improved their stock more tonight than Jalen Noel did, solely because, you know, a week ago we were talking about Jalen Noel as a guy who's probably going to get cut so that we can sign Rondae Hollis-Jefferson and then, you know, also sign Jordan McLaughlin. But I think tonight just went to show that if we can get a Jalen Noel that is making shots and is this dynamic off the dribble and is that competent defensively, I mean, what do we need? Yeah. What do we need Jordan McLaughlin for? You know what I'm saying?
I think the ceiling is
higher with Noel than it is with McLaughlin if they're both playing at their best.
Oh, for sure. And I think if, you know, J-Mac's playing hardball, then, you know, he just got dealt a pretty bad hand tonight because that's the one thing he didn't want was for Noel to come in as that third string point guard and put on a show. And he's obviously on a team friendly 4-year deal or 3 years, including this one. It's not something that improved J-Mac's stock or improved the likelihood of J-Mac coming back, I think, because you're not going to get this Jalen Noel every night for sure. And maybe in the regular season, he doesn't even play any minutes tonight. You kind of just roll with Rubio, Russell, and even Jarrett Culver at times. I think Jarrett Culver might have spent a minute or two as the sole point guard as well. So maybe he was more of like the fourth string point guard tonight, but like he showed his value. And guys who can hit pull-up threes are extremely valuable. And like you said, like he's a shot creator. He's in the same mold as Anthony Edwards, where if he has the ball and has a little bit of rain, then he can make it rain. That's what they let him do tonight, and maybe that was the show he needed to give the front office. It was a show he needed to give the coaching staff, and maybe now he'll have a little bit more leeway to make the mistakes without fear of getting cut or fear of getting, you know, relegated to the G League and never coming back up. So just in general, a really good night, and like you said, competed hard defensively. I know he noted in the post game that the defense was the one thing that he was kind of focusing on, and he knows that the shots will fall and that he can create for himself, but he wanted to be better defensively, and I thought he was pretty good there tonight and honestly almost won the game for Minnesota off his own back.
Yeah, which I mean, which was incredible to think about. I think Noel's gonna earn this because I mean Jalen Noel made 3 threes last year on 26 attempts, and he made four tonight on seven attempts. I think for him it was just a matter of seeing the damn ball go in.
Yeah.
I mean, we're seeing the way that he shoots. We see how confident he shoots. I mean, he shot 44% on seven attempts last year in Iowa and averaged 21 points a game.
And they weren't, like you said before, they weren't catch and shoot shots in Iowa.
But he
was shooting tough shots and pull up threes, and what, honestly, one of the better G League shooting performances, you know, that they've seen down there. Like he was genuinely great as a shooter last season, and you know, if 75% of that carries over, then he's certainly an NBA player.
Yeah, and I hope he keeps getting opportunities, because if the Timberwolves have a third point guard that can, or a guy that's comfortable playing off the ball too, that can play and shoot like that, if the offense needs a boost, that could legitimately win games for the Timberwolves this year. I think if the Timberwolves can do more than tread water with their bench, or kind of like keep building up enough levees to a point where they're not going to completely get flooded, that's going to be huge, because I think this starting lineup is going to be consistently positive this year. Or, you know, the starting lineup with Ricky Rubio instead of Russell is going to be consistently positive this year.
Yeah, like you said, if you can supplement that positive starting lineup with at least, you know, bench minutes that don't blow you leads, and if Jalen Noel is a part of that, whether he plays spot minutes, whether he's just a guy who comes in a situational basis, that's huge. And if it means that you don't have to drop someone and re-sign McLaughlin, who we're both big fans of McLaughlin, like I think most Timberwolves fans are after last season, but if this means you can keep Hollis Jefferson and you still get that third string point guard, I think that's a win for the front office. It's a win for the coaching staff and just a win in general. I think great game from Noel. Pretty understandable showing from the Wolves. I think that's about what I expected, like I said. And I think that you'll see the sloppiness and the rustiness kind of wear off as we power through these three preseason games.
Yeah, I think the most important thing is just guys kind of understanding the way each other play. And with that, I think we'll just come smarter decisions offensively, guys being less stagnant offensively and kind of knowing when to cut versus knowing when to keep the floor spaced. And then just the communication factor. I think communicating as well as you possibly can is going to be important. And it's the best way to help each other learn and kind of help each other make or learn from mistakes and correct mistakes on the fly. So the more the Timberwolves are able to do that, I think they're going to be just fine. And the positivity and the energy from the whole entire team tonight, I think, was great. And Ryan Saunders noted post game that all of Carl's teammates were tremendous in picking him up and being there for him, and just trying to do everything they could to help him feel comfortable out there. Because I think Britt Robson did a great job on Dane's podcast last week talking about how it's almost like an injury, that the grief is almost like an injury. Like it may not necessarily be a linear progression, and some nights it may bother him more than others. But that, and Ricky said this too, that we just got to do everything in our power to be there for him and support him and understand that it's not going to, you know, it's not going to be linear. It's going to come and go, and that it's a day by day process. And you know, I think that also is true for the whole entire team, in that it's going to be a day by day process and learning more about each other and how to play with one another. But the positive energy, and it seems like all these guys love playing with one another, which is a huge thing to build off of. So I'm excited for Monday.
Yeah, and I'll just add to that before we wrap it up that honestly, the Wolves could have been got beaten by 45 points tonight, and I still would have loved it. Like,
it was absolutely.
It was just good to watch basketball. It was good to watch Kat out there. It was good to watch him and Russell together. Even if we did pick holes in some of the plays together, like it was fun to watch Minnesota basketball. It's been so long, and it finally feels like we're actually back now. We're not just building up to it. We're not trying to come up with content to produce and pick things out of nothing. Like, now we're back, and hopefully from here on out the season goes off without any hitches in it, and that's definitely not a guarantee, but hopefully, you know, this is a season that ends on a positive note and builds into a better 2021 than the year we've just been through. So I'll let you go, Jack. So I've taken up more time than I told you I would, and I know you haven't slept for about 6 months, so I'll let you go. Thanks as usual, man, for coming on, and yeah, always appreciate it, dude.
Yeah, I appreciate it, man. It's always good to be with you, and hopefully we can get more of these weekend night game recaps in as we go along, and we're back at it on Monday. We're back at it on Monday for another round.
Yeah, we'll definitely get something going next week, and obviously it's hard when we're across the globe from each other to do it during the week with work and stuff, but I think next week we'll probably hit on both the games that are on, you know, the Memphis game and the Dallas preseason game, and we'll go into a few other fun things from there, and we'll work something out. But as I said, thank you, dude, and everyone else, thanks for listening. Like, rate, comment, subscribe, all that good stuff, and I'll see all you guys next week.